Welcome inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly. During the past 50 years, many people in coal country have watched as their towns have faded to mere shadows of what they used to be. As mines shut down and jobs left, hundreds of coal towns have wasted away. Schools often serve as a kind of anchor for small towns. When those schools close, it can mean the beginning of a town's decline. The stories surrounding school consolidation are not only here in Appalachia, though. A consolidation movement during the past few decades has changed how a lot of rural Americans interact with school pride and how communities are involved with their local schools. School consolidation is when school districts close two or more schools for educational or economic benefits. But in communities already in economic decline, the closing of a local school can have long-term ripple effects for the people who live there. McDowell County, West Virginia, for example, has been among the hardest hit. The population has decreased by almost 17% since 2010. Where once there were thriving businesses and lively communities, there's little that looks the same. We'll spend the first half of today's show hearing the story about North Fork High School through the lens of its basketball team's rise to fame.
I think definitely, and not only the excitement, but of course there is much more on the line for the North Fork Blue Demons. The Demons, they have won 7 out of the last 9 championships in AA, and they're going to tie a national record should they win today's game. Of course, Winfield, they have had marvelous...
The school was quite famous during the 1970s and 80s, winning 8 state basketball championships in a row during one particularly successful stretch. West Virginia Public Broadcasting's John Hale has family roots in this community. Our producer Roxy Todd sat down with him to hear about the story he uncovered about North Fork High.
So this story, which we'll hear in just a minute, is a really personal one for you and your family. You returned back to your family's home of North Fork, and most of you have since moved away. But this is where you all call home, essentially. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I moved from North Fork when I was relatively young, but we still had family and everyone who lived down in North Fork. My mother taught at Switchback Elementary, which was a elementary school down there. And when I was little, my godmother was actually still in Algoma. And my grandparents live in Algoma. So even though we didn't live there, you know, it was almost like it was my second home.
So North Fork actually didn't become a high school until 1966, as far as I understand. Essentially, it was consolidated right after integration became law and the black school merged with the white school. And now your uncles went to school a few years after that. What did they remember from this time in terms of how racial integration kind of played out in their community?
My two uncles, David McDaniel and Mark Page, we called him Uncle Joe, they said they really didn't notice much of a change when integration happened due to the, you know, community itself being pretty much well-knit and, you know, tied together.
And would you describe your two uncles for us?
Yes. My Uncle David, tall, I say about 6'5", kind of a lanky build. He is the life of a party. he could probably go in a room and not only draw attention to himself, but also, you know, make sure everyone is having a good time. My other uncle, Uncle Joe, he was a little bit more reserved, but he had a sense of humor that was real, real low key. That was one of the best things that that I remember about him.
And one of the other people you talked to for this story is Carol Sizemore. Tell us a little bit about her.
Carol's a longtime resident, and she's the current mayor of North Fork. She has been there since the very beginning. She remembers all of the sights and sounds of North Fork, and she remembers how great the community was back in the day.
We had a drugstore. We had a Masonic building. We had a wonderful high school, a few nice restaurants. So it was just a meeting place, a social meeting place for everybody to come because... When I was young in that time, this was like a metropolitan area.
And your uncles told you a similar story about when McDowell County was doing really well, coal was booming, and there were a lot of businesses and a lot of people back in the 60s and 70s. Let's pick back up. I think there's a story your Uncle David told you about when coal was doing really well.
Yeah, my Uncle David remembers that back when McDowell County in the 60s and 70s, when the coal fields were booming, it seemed like they had everything that they could ever want. It was filled with stores and restaurants, and there was a really, really big car dealership down there called Carroll Motors. That was everyone's local car dealership. And the mines were doing so well in the 60s that he worked as a coal miner over the summer, and he made some really good money. And I mean really good.
The money was so good, I bought me a 68 Plymouth Roadrunner with two paydays. So when I went back to school, after that summer, I was the man. I was the man. But life was good around here, man. It was really good.
Cole was king in McDowell County in the 60s and 70s. At one point, this county is one of the richest in the country due to coal production. There were more than 53 communities that either had their own mines or housed miners who worked in the area. The coal mines attracted workers from all over the country, even the world. So there was a pretty diverse group of people in McDowell, from what my Uncle Joe remembers.
Everybody knew everybody. It wasn't that, you know, there wasn't any hate in the air. You know, it wasn't any racial tensions and all that stuff. No, no, we didn't have, at least as far as I'm concerned, the Italians, the whites, the blacks, we all got along great.
But athletes were probably treated better than non-athletes, given their status in the community. David admits that he only realized later that North Fork may have been more segregated than he realized.
With me getting attention on who I was, I didn't know racial things happened until I got older and I heard some of other people's stories. Even the principal, they say he used to carry a gun. I didn't know this. I was a basketball star at the time, and I got along with white folks and black folks. I really didn't see it because even the principal, even the police officer, the store owners, the dry cleaner man, the smokehouse man, everybody treated me well. And I just thought that's the way it was. But after I grew up and started hearing other people's stories on what used to go around here, but I do remember the movie theater, the Freeman Theater, we always sat in the back. White folks sat up front.
David may have been isolated from some of the tensions that were present, but there were a lot of African Americans in North Fork in the 1960s. He and Joe both grew up in a little community called Algoma, just outside of town.
40 or 50 families, and at least, and you're talking maybe three or four white on the ends, and everybody else is black. Black families. Yeah, there's a lot of families there, and all black, in that one community.
Algoma was a small community. If you blinked, you might not notice you drove through it. When they were kids, Joe and David played without any blacktop or asphalt, just dirt. They lovingly referred to those games as Dust Bowl games. I went out to Algoma to check out the site where they once played basketball on their makeshift court.
Certain neighborhoods around here had playgrounds. In my neighborhood, we didn't. We created our own playground. Even when we played basketball, we used to have to go up in the mountain, cut our tree. We'd get they used to have metal tabletops. We'd go get a metal tabletop and tack it onto that tree, and that'd be our backboard. We made our own stuff around here, man, all the way.
We played in the summertime. We played in the fall. We played in the winter. I can remember waiting for the snow to stop one time, and I wanted to be the first one up there to shoot the ball and knock the snow off the nets. So, I just couldn't wait to get up to that basketball court. And I can still today remember that feeling that, hey, I made that shot.
There were no streetlights, so not only did they have to get creative with the materials they used, they also had to be resourceful when it came to lighting the court.
And we had a curve. When the car come around the curve, it'll shine it on the goal, and then we'll shoot when the light hit the goal.
All those hours playing basketball paid off for David and Joe. They both made the high school team, and although they played during different years, each would be responsible for making history in North Fork. More about that in a minute. But first, I need to tell you about their coach, Jennings Boyd.
Play as a team. Do the things we're supposed to do. The ball game's not over. Understand, it's a 10-point game, fellas. It's 6 minutes to play yet. That's a good basketball team that you're playing. Now wake up and let's go.
Jennings Boyd was a math teacher at North Fork High School. Not only did he apply his analytical teachings in the classroom, he also applied it on the court. Again, here's Carol Sizemore.
Jennings was an excellent educator. He was dedicated in his endeavors in the coaching industry. He was always there to help his students.
He had a style that fit the players. He was easygoing. He would explain things. As long as the players did what they were supposed to do, he was calm, easygoing, and everything. But if they didn't do what they were supposed to do, or they did something crazy, he wasn't adverse to putting his foot down and saying, "Listen, fellas."
That's Gary Dove. He was the official statistician of the Norfolk Blue Demons. The Keystone native was approached by Boyd when he was in the 10th grade about playing basketball for the team, but he instead chose to help out in another way. He spent years at Coach Boyd's side and traveled with the team. Gary witnessed Coach Boyd mold these young men and instill in them a dedication that few would hear of. Coach Boyd commanded respect from his players, but he also rewarded his players for their hard work and dedication to the team. Boyd gave a new pair of sneakers to the leading rebounder, another player with the most leading assists, and he also gave a pair of shoes to the player who has shot the highest percentage of free throws. Joe and David, of course, had their own personal collection.
I know one pair I got was a pair of blue suede Converses. Suede, and they were nice, and I loved them shoes, you know. But
nobody could win the sneakers like me, because when it came to free throw shooting, nobody could outshoot me.
You're listening to Inside Appalachia. I'm Roxy Todd. We've been listening to a story my colleague John Hale produced about his family's high school basketball team, the North Fork Blue Demons. John, around the early 70s, the Blue Demons won their first state championship title. Tell us about that game.
So the year was 1971, and the North Fork Blue Demons went up against Gully Bridge at the brand new West Virginia University Mountaineer Coliseum. Fun fact, this is one of the first games to be played in that brand new Coliseum. The Blue Demons were down by 13 points at the half. And it wasn't because they weren't playing good ball. It's just that the Gully Bridge team was, you know, just a really, really good team. And, you know, for an example, they had a player on Gully Bridge, I believe, that was about like 6'6", almost 300 pounds. So they were getting knocked around a lot. After halftime, you know, their coach, Jennings Boyd, sat there and told them, he said, "Look, fellas, you aren't playing bad ball. They're just outplaying you a little bit." So once they came out, they instituted a defensive tactic called the press. And basically what it is, it's where you apply pressure off of an inbound pass up and down the full length of the court. You would basically run the other team down because of your quickness and speed, and you always stay on them in an aggressive-like manner. My Uncle David joked, he said, you know, we used to press teams to death back in the day. So when you run up and down and you move the game at a faster pace, that creates chaos on the court and in turn would lead to fouls. And the Blue Demons were able to take advantage of that by getting fouls and making all their foul shots in order to keep them up ahead. And that's eventually what gave them the win in the 1971 championship.
Me and my buddy Steve Hudson and Anthony Wheeler was talking about Temptation. That's when Cloud 9 was on. That's when the song Cloud 9 was out. Just so happened, we went out and bought us some hats and put it on. We became the Temptation. Cloud 9. We was Cloud 9 and everything, man.
Bringing home a state championship was huge for the people of Norfolk. With the odds stacked against them, the Blue Demons were able to turn the tide and beat Gully Bridge for the 1971 championship.
People was waiting on us in Bluefield and stuff. And they followed. We had like a little tight parade all the way down. And then when we got to the high school, when we got back to the school, the whole parking lot, the whole back of the school was nothing but people and crowds.
Fire trucks from North Fork were up there, and they led a procession down 52 through North Fork, through Keystone, and people out on the streets waving, and just a great amount of pride. The pride that everyone had in the team was tenfold after the championship win.
3 years later, Norfolk would again win the state AA championship title. This win would be the first of an 8-year streak for Norfolk High School. Joe captained the 74 team and led the Blue Demons to a state championship win over Huntington Vincent.
We as the class of 74, we would always say, well, for that 8 straight, it started with us. We got them ready. You know, we got them ready. We trained them well. And because we trained them well, they trained this next team well. They trained the next team, and it went for, you know, 8 straight state championships. And that's unheard of. You know, we're just hard to be beat.
That's it. National record tying 7 championships. Norfolk almost 7. Well, they can erase the almost. They have 7 consecutive championships.
little old ladies who wouldn't know basketball from football became, you know, big fans because it brought positive notoriety and attention to the community.
When they came back from a championship game, there was a cavalcade of people standing out on the streets, you know, welcoming them back. And it was just pride. It was just, you know, it was like you played in the game. That's how proud you were of the accomplishment.
The Blue Demons were a force to be reckoned with, beating teams that went nearly undefeated during the regular season. This small coal mining town was getting national attention. The townspeople wore jackets and hats that had the slogan, Norfolk, West Virginia, basketball capital of the United States.
Ladies and gentlemen, a new national record for 8 years in a row, the NCAA champions of West Virginia.
After college, Joe returned to Norfolk and became the assistant coach to Boyd in 1979. Then, in 1983, Joe became the new head coach of the Norfolk Blue Demons, a task that he did not take lightly.
Honestly, it was kind of scary. You know, I was nervous. I was nervous a lot of days, a lot of nights. I was very, very nervous because of the tradition that Norfolk had. I mean, you know, who wouldn't be?
After a two-year absence from the state tournament, Joe led the Blue Demons to win the 1984 state championships. This win felt like the comeback the town needed, desperately. Because in 84, jobs in Norfolk were really starting to disappear. Eastern Coal, the largest coal mine in the county, had shut down operations. And in the midst of that, the high school winning the state title just felt like there was a ray of hope in sight. And then, everything changed.
I started getting into a groove, and then they closed the school down.
After setting a national record in high school basketball and winning another title in 84, people in Norfolk were feeling pretty good about their high school and community. That's why this news came as a complete shock. Here's Gary Duff.
The way Jim Lane, our principal, found out about it was one of the board members who had voted against it called him that night and told him that, quote, we closed your high school tonight, and end quote, and, you know, he wasn't even aware of the fact that they were even going to consider it, let alone, you know, vote on it.
We didn't see it coming. I can remember coming down the hallway the next morning, and I was talking to one of the teachers, and she said, I spoke to her. I said, good morning, how are you today? And she looked at me, and she said, oh, it's not a good morning. And I said, it's not? No, no. She said, you don't know? And I said, no, I don't know. What's going on? And then she told me that they had voted the night before to close the school.
With everything that Norfolk had accomplished, why now? What was the reason to close a school that not only had an impressive sports record, but was vital to the community?
I believe, personally, that was a political decision. This way, I really believe it was a political decision because Norfolk was getting too much attention for a little small town like this. And with all the goodness that was going on.
People were just devastated, appalled that they would do something like that.
The school's fate came down to the vote of five Board of Education members. Three of the five chose to close the school. After a heated back and forth, two of the board members urged their counterparts to reconsider. But the three board members who wanted the school closure were adamant in their decision. Norfolk High School was to be no more. The students of Norfolk High organized a mass walkout once the news came, and even organized a protest against the board's decision. The community organized a small committee to hopefully change the board's mind.
Down the line, we were going to end up having to litigate. We got a lawyer out of Parkersburg, William Jacobs, who filed an injunction to stop the closing of the school. That went to circuit court down here. The judge ruled that it would be stopped and certain things had to happen. Long story short, we went all the way to the State Board of Education and they upheld the county ruling, but the legislature after that, we had talked to the legislative, some of our legislative members, and they made it a law that you have to have public hearings now. You can't just have a meeting and say, we're going to close the school.
Several years prior, two rival schools, Gary and Welch, had been merged together into one, a new school building on top of a former mountaintop removal site called Mount View. Mount View became a bitter rival to the Blue Demons in the years leading up to the big consolidation. Now all the kids in the county were squeezed into one school, on top of a hill. I asked my Uncle Joe, how did the students and parents adjust to the forced consolidation?
Not very well. Not because you got these communities that are always rivals against each other. And you got the parents and people who are always, you know, rooting against this other town and all. Now all of a sudden, you all, your kids are all on the same team. So it was a lot of tension going on at Mount View High School.
It was never a cohesive atmosphere, never. And even with Gary and Welch, it still wasn't the ideal place. The Blue Demons, they felt rejected in one way by just saying, oh, well, forget about your school. Come here and be happy about it.
This didn't feel right. None of it did. The way the voting went down, the urgency to close the school with no notice, I'm left scratching my head wondering why. Norfolk had the population to keep the school, their building was intact, and they were receiving national attention for their sports legacy. So why would a school like Norfolk be merged with a school outside of its conference?
Norfolk was a double A school until the day they closed the doors. It was still double A.
After the school closed, David says he could really see the town fading.
The closing of the school, that's when you really seen some declining around here. Because if you ain't got kids in the neighborhood and you ain't doing no business in your own town, that drags everything down. If it ain't no school, that means you ain't got no jobs for teachers, and the coal fields is closing down too. That's when I actually seen the decline starting in 85. If you went to Norfolk and had some things going on at Norfolk, that was real personal that they closing the school, you know, because I got some history in there and some story, lots of stories. So that was heartbreaking. That was really heartbreaking that they closed the school like that.
You might be wondering what happened to the trophies from Norfolk. Well, when Norfolk High closed, the trophies were moved to the local Norfolk Museum. After that building began to fall into disrepair, they were then moved to City Hall, where they reside till this day. Years of accomplishments and the namesake of a small town now sit in a tiny bank vault in City Hall.
There's no one thing that's going to be a saving grace. Right now, we're working on Band-Aids. And soon the disease will be gone. As the doctor says, you'll never be 100% yourself, but you'll feel 100% better.
Norfolk and McDowell County as a whole has seen some rough times over the past few years. A majority of the coal mines in McDowell County ceased production. And in 2001, violent floods tore through the community, taking with it a majority of the remaining infrastructure, as well as the population. When I drive down to Norfolk, it's hard to imagine how great this little town was. I'm able to see a lot of the landmarks my uncles recall when they speak of the good times, but now, a lot of those buildings just sit empty and abandoned. The streets really don't have that much traffic, other than a few coal trucks and the trains that run through the town. I think to myself, what would I do if a place I love so much slowly faded away? How would I feel?
It hurts me because I can remember when it was, it wasn't the way it is now. I can remember when, you know, there was a coal mine every 5 miles.
Just to come back and see the decline, where all the houses used to be. Ain't nothing but weeds now, you know. All that hurts when this used to be a special place.
When at least get on your radar that something need to be done about this property?
The first time I went in to see if there was any memorabilia, it was already abandoned, and The doors were either broken into, open, blatantly open, or rusted off, or, you know, some way pried open. And I went in and I saw the gym, and I knew.
When Norfolk High closed, it was made into a middle school. And in 2002, the decision was made to close the school permanently. Throughout the years, due to vandalism and neglect, the town made the tough decision to tear down the old building.
I see the roof getting ready to...
You see daylight.
Yeah, I see daylight coming through. That's bad.
That's bad, but here, it's even worse. There's a whole section that's completely gone.
Just to see them even think about turning it down, it's sad. It's just a sad thing. See the town go down, the county go down, and then see the school, that all that history. Now, when I ain't here to tell it, and my couple other friends, classmates, ain't here to tell these stories, ain't gonna be no story.
It's sad to see what's happened to the town of Norfolk, but this story isn't an isolated incident. There are small towns all around southern West Virginia that seem to be just barely hanging on. State lawmakers grapple with population loss and how devastating it is to the West Virginia economy. Carol Sosmore still works in Norfolk, and through the combined effort of elected officials, they were able to get grants for a new water system in the small town, as well as attract tourists who come to the area to ride four-wheelers along the Hatfield-McCoy Trail. North Fork was a powerhouse of a town, from the economic wealth from coal production to the athletic achievements that garnered national attention from across the country. It's easy to forget that without the community of people that made up this small coal town, none of this would have been possible. During the production of this piece, Marco Del Page, my Uncle Joe, passed away following a sudden illness. I'm grateful that I had time to sit down with him and recount his career as a basketball player, a coach, and an educator. He was a great man who left an impact on so many people who were fortunate to know him. This piece is dedicated to his memory.